Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. My name is Jeff Westover, proprietor at the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas, which is the world's largest and most active year-round community dedicated to Christmas, and we are in our 30th year of celebrating Christmas together. 30 years is a long time, and over the course of that time, we've seen many things, but we've never seen the likes of what we just went through for Christmas 2020. I thought, frankly, we were done talking about it, but experiencing Christmas means needing to talk about it, I guess, and Christmas 2020 was different for just about everyone. Over the course of the past month, many have reached out to us to share what they are feeling. Some have had positive things to say about this very different Christmas, and, well, others have had less than positive things to say. And personally, I won't sugarcoat it. My personal world saw an almost imperceptible Christmas this year. It hardly happened at all for me. I never got my tree up. I have Christmas cards still unopened sitting at my home, which is 100 miles away from where circumstances brought me last September, and my Christmas Eve and Christmas Day were without the presence of my family. Now, that being said, I would note that I cannot complain of tragedy this past Christmas season, not like a lot of people experienced. As of this episode, the United States is looking at a pandemic death toll of about 400,000, and worldwide we're now over 2 million souls who have been lost to this virus. So very many people were grieving over this past Christmas, and we've been spared here. We had our turn with COVID, and I would tell you some moments were downright frightening. We also know that this thing's not over. In fact, the pandemic is just the first of many worldwide realities that cause people to wonder what Christmas 2021 will be like. And that, my friends, is where we're going to go in this episode. It's a dangerous thing. We tried last year to read the Merry Tea Leaves, and while we got some of it right, we have learned through just our conversations alone of the past 30 days that the Christmas we just experienced was not one that anybody really anticipated correctly. So we're cautious in looking ahead this year. It is hard to know what life will be like in just the next month, much less what Christmas will be like when we go through it again. One thing I'm certain of as we look forward is that 2020 and the Christmas we celebrated taught us a lot. In fact, it has likely shaped the next Christmas that we will share together, and perhaps will shape the next several Christmases to come.
Someday at Christmas, men won't be boys, playing with bombs like kids play with toys. One warm December, our hearts will see a world where we're all free. Someday at Christmas, there'll be no wars, when we have learned what Christmas is for. When we have found what life's really worth, there'll be peace on earth. Someday all our dreams will come to be. Someday in a world where men are free. Maybe not in time for you and me, but someday at Christmas time. Christmas, there'll be no tears, for all men are any moment, one prayer away from my world today.
That's a cut from one of the best new albums to come out of Christmas 2020 from Luke McMaster, an album available for download everywhere titled Christmas Present. You can read more about it at lukemcmaster.com. That song, of course, was made famous by Stevie Wonder in 1967, with his album carrying the same name, titled Someday at Christmas. 1967 is an interesting year to note in history. It was, like what we passed through last year, a tumultuous Christmas, and things only got more strange with the year of 1968. In fact, we encourage you to go back and listen to the episode we did about the Christmas of 1968, because it was just one of those Christmases that can never be forgotten. I draw your attention to this song not because it was a huge hit. The song originally came out in 1966 as a standalone single before going on the following year as the title cut for Wonder's first Christmas album. But there's something about this song that resonates for us today, something nearly prophetic in the lyrics that include, quote, "Someday at Christmas there'll be no wars when we have learned what Christmas is for. When we have found what life's really worth, there will be peace on earth," unquote. There are some that say that we are at war right now, the whole world. In fact, without getting political here and commenting on what transpired in the United States during 2020, I would share these comments made by retired General Thomas McInerney very recently.
World War III has started. World War III is a hybrid war that has started, that is a mixture of biological, cyber warfare, and other means. They have killed, as of yesterday, 375,000 Americans through COVID-19, which was an outright biological attack on the United States, disguised as a pandemic.
Now, let me just stop right here and reiterate something. I share this clip not because I support the idea that we are at war. In fact, many in the media have called this clip fake news, and that we are not actually at war. I share this to really discuss what 2020 was all about, what really happened. There wasn't really a clear-cut challenge, the virus aside, or even a sharply focused enemy that we were all fighting in 2020. It was a year of so many conflicting messages and voices who just disagreed. And yes, it was an election year. And we know the pattern of what happens during election year politics. But there was a whole new level of that craziness this year. And it spilled over and it affected the world in a big way at Christmas. Unlike most election years in history, lives really changed last year. In fact, we were all really just bystanders in this drama, made to feel the heat and suffer the consequences of the bombs that were dropped in 2020. But none of us were actually involved in the recruiting and the training and the engagement of the battle. We were bystanders to it. And this, I think, is why so many emerged from Christmas 2020 to say, it's changed. Christmas isn't the same. Christmas didn't really happen. There was no joy in it for me. There was no feeling, and I want that back. Interestingly enough, 2020 was not the first time that we felt this way.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas. If only
this familiar Christmas classic from Bing Crosby dates from 1943, a Christmas that was observed before D-Day, and really before many from America, at least, had seen any kind of action. And it was a dark time. It was a time of separation and isolation for nearly everyone. It was a Christmas like few had ever seen. Nowhere was that more evident than on the new battleship, the North Carolina. The ship was out at sea, both training and headed for battlefields yet unknown. The ship's captain knew that nearly every serviceman aboard was away from home at Christmas for the first time in 1943. Telling the men that he intended to help them bring Christmas to their families, he had the ship's chaplain collect $5 from each man, and he sent the money to Macy's in New York City. In providing the men's home addresses, the chaplain explained that he wanted Macy's to supply toys and gifts for the families of the servicemen to be sent home in time for Christmas. Well, Macy's did more than that. They filmed each family member of the servicemen and got them to give a special Christmas greeting. In fact, for many of the men, the films that they showed on the ship's Christmas party gave them a brief glimpse of some children that they had never met before, babies that had been born while they were away in training. The exchange of greetings and gifts were, as you can imagine, a very emotional thing. And that event only became more emotional with Bing's new song played at the end of the ship's Christmas program. As we have discussed before in our episodes about Christmas during World War II and of Christmas in crisis, these monumental times were always preceded by a tense period of unknown. For the men on the North Carolina, they had no idea when or if they would be home. For my grandparents, serving as school teachers in a Japanese internment center in the West Deserts of Utah, well, it was a period of career suicide. They were young. My father at that time was their only child, and 1943 would be just his second Christmas. Grandma and Grandpa were just a few years removed from college and just starting their careers in education. The teaching positions they secured with the Japanese, all wrongly rounded up into camps over the American West by the U.S. government, cast my grandparents in a negative light and subjected them to all kinds of scorn. My grandfather liked to tell the story of driving in from the desert for hours just to get a haircut in the nearest town, only to be turned away because, quote, he served the Japs, unquote. My grandparents did not know how all this would look on their resumes after the war was over. For my other grandparents, Christmas 1943 was something that they never saw coming. My mother was born in January of 1943, and her father only ever saw her during those first 30 days of her life. By Valentine's Day in February 1943, he had been drafted and was in boot camp. His military career that first year saw many twists and turns. Thinking he would be based on the U.S. West Coast to serve as a codebreaker against the Japanese, he was in mid-year reassigned to the European Theater of Operations. After my grandfather had sent my grandmother with my mom to California, he had a change in orders and was sent in the other direction. He went to England, and both of them spent their first Christmas alone, far from any family at all, in 1943. Was our Christmas of 2020 a Christmas like this? Well, I don't know. These days, if there is such a thing as a world war, I'm not sure it's going to be fought with troops in a collective national effort like what we saw during the Second World War. And frankly, I'm more concerned with what we're seeing at home than abroad these days. Oh, there are problems all over, but as a country, I would tell you I've never seen a time of such division and rancor and outrageous behavior on nearly every side. Such talk was really prevalent during Christmas of 2020. And do you want to know what brought more email to us in Christmas 2020 than anything else? Setting aside Santa, of course, he gets more email than anybody. But every year, once the season is over, we go through and audit our email, which I consider very different from our forums. Email is one-way communication for us. I don't say that with any measure of pride, by the way. I wish we had time to respond to every email that we receive, but that left as a matter of practicality years ago. We just get thousands of emails that we can't begin to respond to. Now, those who want to hold a conversation will join us at the Merry Forums, but those who just want to spew usually draft an email, and many send them anonymously. And boy, did they spew this year. I never understood that, but okay, that's what people do. I don't think I would ever do that, just write to a website and give them an opinion they didn't ask for. Within those unsolicited emails, we get all manner of questions and comments and suggestions and requests and complaints, honestly. A season of such email usually reveals trends that we didn't notice while we were going through it. And did you know what the number one hot-button email topic was for Christmas 2020? It was the fact that Hallmark dropped their Gone with the Wind ornaments from their line. I kid you not. In the spirit of supporting BLM and participating in the cancel culture world of 2020, Hallmark took a profitable, traditional 40-year product and canned it right in the middle of the ornament selling season. And rarely have we seen people so pissed. Seriously, the year they decided that the song "It's Baby, Baby, It's Cold Outside" was a date-rape song didn't get this kind of email. The year they said the messaging from the story of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was inappropriate never drew this kind of response. When the governor of Rhode Island called a Christmas tree a holiday tree, the year they disallowed Christmas carols in vet hospitals, and even the year they said Santa Claus was a secular figure, never got people as riled up as the nixing of Gone with the Wind ornaments by Hallmark. You would believe the sentiments of these comments, but you seriously would not believe the violent undertones of a lot of these emails. And that, my friends, bothers me more than anything else. We seem to be living during a time of declining humanity. It's not good enough, it feels, to just disagree with someone anymore. So much commentary and rhetoric these days goes beyond merely canceling. I'm seeing folks demonize the enemy more and more. And that's just not who we are. And that's not Christmas. In fact, it's far from it. One of the most stunning moments in my personal history of the study of Christmas came when I saw the pictures of Adolf Hitler and the Nazi high command celebrating Christmas. Go ahead and Google it sometime. Those images are online. I think they were provided by Life magazine at some point. And there's nothing untoward about them. They have Christmas trees and angels and baby Jesus and just about everything else you can imagine in those pictures. Along with, well, swastikas. Seeing them in color really disturbed me. After all, how can people who claim belief in Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, do what the Nazis did? Over time, I've learned to steer my thinking away from the war in terms of Hitler and Stalin and Roosevelt and Churchill and Truman. I can think of those guys in the context of war just fine, but not in the context of Christmas. In fact, there's a Christmas story of men at war, both German and American, I think that bears repeating at this point.
Heilige Nacht, alle Schläfer.
Silent Night, of course, is known around the world, but I think many people forget that it's Austrian in origin. I think as well that people forget that many of the men who fought for Germany in 1943 were men of integrity. They were good men. Such was the case for one German pilot by the name of Franz Stiegler, an ace with more than 20 kills to his name for the Germans in 1943. On December 20th, just before Christmas, Franz Stiegler had been on the ground in Oldenburg, Germany, smoking a cigarette while his plane, a Messerschmitt 109, was getting rearmed and refueled. What was waiting for him in the skies from the enemy was unknown to Stiegler at that moment. As had happened before, he heard it before he saw it. At first it sounded like a high pitch off in the distance. Then it was crushing like a multitude of drums, a low-flying aircraft. And here it came, just a few miles out, this American bomber that had dropped no bombs. Then suddenly it was over them and gone. And nobody there on the ground said a word. The crew unhooked the hoses. Franz flicked away his cigarette, saluted his sergeant, and he was gone, off in pursuit of that same American bomber. That plane had seen all the trouble it could handle, and then some, before Stiegler took off after it. Commanded by a young second lieutenant, Charles Brown, the plane, called Ye Old Pub, was on its maiden mission, and it had not gone well. One of his crew members was dead, and six others were wounded, and Lieutenant Brown was alone in his cockpit, the three unharmed men tending to the others. Brown's B-17 had been attacked by 15 German planes and left for dead, and Brown himself had been knocked out in the assault and injured, regaining consciousness just in enough time to pull the plane out of a near-fatal nosedive. As Stiegler quickly gained on the crippled aircraft, he could not believe what he was seeing. This bomber had no tail guns blinking. This plane had no left stabilizer. This plane had no tail gun compartment left, and as he got closer, Stiegler saw the terrified tail gunner himself, his fleece collar soaked red, the guns themselves streaked with blood, icicles of blood hanging from their barrels. He pulled alongside the plane and saw clean through the middle where the skin had been blown apart by shells. He saw these terrified young men attempting to tend to their wounded. He drew equal to the B-17 and saw that the nose of the plane, too, had been blown away. How was this thing still in the air, he thought. Well, at first, Lieutenant Brown didn't notice the small German plane to his right. He was thinking. He had six wounded men in the back. Some were strong enough to jump out, but the critically injured would never survive the German forest. He'd have to keep flying, try to make it to England, but the others should jump. The chances that this plane would make it much further were minuscule. Brown's co-pilot, known as Pinky, re-entered the cockpit. "We're staying," he said. "The guys all decided you're going to need help to fly this girl home." But Brown wasn't listening. He was looking past Pinky, frozen. Pinky turned to his right, and he saw the German. Brown finally spoke. "He's going to destroy us," he said. The moment when both pilots saw each other from just yards away is one that will be forever etched in their memories. A sitting duck, like the old pub, was not a target that the German pilot Stiegler could miss. With this kill, he would gain Germany's highest military honors, the Flying Cross. But before he could process that, he remembered a lesson that he had learned as a new pilot fighting in North Africa. On his first day on base, he was taken aside by his commanding officer, Lieutenant Gustav Rodel, who would have a profound impact on his life during and after the war. On the afternoon of his first mission, Rodel decided he'd join Stiegler, the young pilot. Before takeoff, they talked. "Let what I am about to say to you act as a warning," Rodel said. "Honor is everything here. Every single time you go up, you will be outnumbered." Stiegler nodded, but he didn't say anything. What did Rodel mean by that? Stiegler was overwhelmed by the question in that moment. There never seemed to be a right way to respond in his training, and the irony that he couldn't, above all, trust his fellow soldiers was not lost on him. But Rodel kept on. "What will you do, for instance, if you find your enemy floating in a parachute?" Well, Stiegler thought about that. How do you answer that? What's the right answer? Stiegler could only say, I guess I've never thought that far ahead. And then Rodale said something that made an impact. He said, if I ever see or hear of you shooting at a man in a parachute, I will shoot you down myself. You follow the rules of war for you, not for your enemy. You fight by rules to keep your humanity. It was in this moment that Stiegler made a fateful decision. Instead of shooting down the American bomber, he drew up alongside and tried to communicate with the American pilot to set the plane down. And for several moments, American Charlie Brown couldn't decide what the German pilot was trying to say. Brown knew that some of his men could bail and probably survive, but they were in enemy territory, and if they survived the jump, they would surely be in for a fight once they hit the ground. Brown decided that if he could get past this German pilot, he would attempt to fly the crippled aircraft all the way back to England, some 250 miles. Somehow Stiegler understood Brown's intent, even though he risked a court-martial for so doing. He decided to escort Lieutenant Brown and his crew out of Germany before giving them a final salute. But the story doesn't end there. It was nearly 40 years later when Brown decided that he would try to find that German pilot who had made the Christmas of 1943 one that Charles Brown and most of his crew would live to see. Against all odds, Brown landed his B-17 in England. He served right up until the beginning of the Vietnam War and eventually settled with his wife in Miami. Stiegler, who spent months after December 20th, 1943, living in fear that he would be found out, served through the end of World War II, and unable to ever feel at home again in Germany, he relocated to Vancouver, Canada in 1953. Aside from telling their wives, both men had rarely spoken of that encounter. In Stiegler's case, it was an act of treason punishable by death. There was no way he was going to tell anybody about it. But Brown actually told his commanding officer and was instructed to treat the event as classified. Nobody wanted to humanize the enemy. Brown, who was still deeply traumatized by the incident, thought about searching for the German until finally in January 1990, knowing the odds were against him, he took out an ad in a newsletter for fighter pilots, looking for the one who, quote, saved my life on December 20, 1943, unquote. He held back one piece of information in his ad, the part about the German pilot abandoning his B-17 bomber. At home in Vancouver, Stiegler saw the ad. He yelled to his wife, "This is him. This is the one I didn't shoot down." Franz had always wondered if the great risk he'd taken had been worth it, if the American had made it home. Brown had always wondered what the German had been planning to do to him and why he had let him go. He immediately wrote a letter to Lieutenant Charlie Brown. Brown was too impatient to actually read it. He called the operator and had her look up Franz Stiegler's number, then placed the call immediately. Quote, "When I let you go over the sea," Stiegler said, "I thought you'd never make it," unquote. "My God," Brown said, "it's you." Tears were streaming down his face. Stiegler had answered Brown's secret question without Brown having to ask it. "What were you pointing for?" Brown said, 40 years later. Stiegler, too, was crying by this point. He explained everything. He could tell that Brown had no idea how bad the plane was and that he was pointing first to the ground at Germany and then pointing away, mouthing Sweden, that he was trying to escort them to safety and that he had abandoned them only when he saw the gun swing from the turret. "Good luck," he had said to Brown from his cockpit. "You're in God's hands." The two men, in many ways, had lived parallel lives after the war. Stiegler had a daughter, Brown had two. Both were Christians, and in combat, Stiegler kept rosary beads in his left pocket and had used them so much the paint stripped bare from the terror he had faced as a pilot. Brown flew with the Bible in his pocket, and in moments of extreme fear, he'd pat it so my prayers would beam up faster, he said. Both felt that they should tell their story to as many people as would hear it, but not for money, but to make people realize that there's always another way, that the world could be infinitely better than it was. It was a Christmas for both men where humanity outweighed the priorities of war. It was a Christmas where Christmas was practiced in its purest form. It was a Christmas where peace prevailed. That mashup of O Holy Night and Ave Maria by Lexi Walker with the Piano Guys is one of the greatest Christmas songs of the past decade, and it underscores the humanity we need in Christmas right now. It's out there, friends. Let me share with you a tender story of Christmas 2020, one that I have yet to share anywhere. We lost several members in 2020 on the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas. I don't know if all of them were due to COVID, and I know a few of them had serious illnesses dating back for several years, and that really hardly matters at this point. Now, I've told you many times about the Merry Forums. We mention the forums in every episode of our podcast, and we do that because we believe it occupies a singular place in the world of Christmas online. I'm not saying that just because it's my site, and I certainly don't credit myself for the wondrous place that it is. This story just highlights in a great way what this community of Christmas is all about. We have long struggled with what to do about a situation when a member passes away. Of course we miss them, and of course we grieve over their loss. But Christmas being what it is, so traditional and meaningful for so many, it's not unusual on our forum to see a post that is 5, 10, or even 15 years old get resurrected in a moment because it triggers an all-new response. We have threads on the forums that are decades old, and they just continue endlessly. How does one respond, however, to an account where the owner or the originator of a thread is passed on? It's a familiar problem. What do you do with the social media accounts of a loved one? How are they to be managed going forward? And sometimes we don't know how to answer that question. It's not unusual for family members of the deceased to show up on the Merry Forums to let their wishes to us be known, and they help us decide what to do. And that's what happened to this one particular member of the forums who passed away in 2020. She had been with us for many, many years. Her daughter reached out to me to say that the family was closing her mother's accounts online, and she came across her membership at My Merry Christmas and was surprised. that her mom was active with us. She never knew. I told her that's not unusual. I pointed out that her mom had been with us for well over a decade and that for years she had contributed to the site with her wit, her charm, and her compassion. She was also a frequent contributor monetarily to the site and to our efforts with Santa's sleigh every Christmas. And this kind daughter was kind of shocked by that information. Her mom was notoriously tight with her money and not very trusting of people online, and all of it seemed a bit out of character to see her mom and who she was on My Merry Christmas. The daughter's first inclination was just to remove her mother's account and all those years of accumulated data with it. And I really don't like it when people request that, and frankly, I try very hard to discourage it. It leaves a big hole. I feel like it takes a part of our history away, especially for someone who was so loved as this lady was. I cannot honestly ever forget her, even though I've never met her. So I told her daughter to take some time. I asked her to explore her mom's account and to look back on all she had to say over the years on the Merry forums. It didn't take but a day for this nice lady to get back to me. Of all the places where her mom had traveled online, it was at My Merry Christmas in the Merry forums, where she felt that her mother's true light shined the best. She was honestly herself with us, this loving daughter told us. This daughter gained things through her mother's words on the Merry forums that she previously had not known. Her love of Christmas, for example, was not really known to this daughter. But her love of people, of helping others, of being service through kind words, these were all things she knew her mom to be. She called me later in tears and asked me to do what I could to preserve everything I could of what her mom had shared with us. And that's humanity through the power of Christmas, folks. It comes not just from fighter pilots, but from everyday folks sharing with other everyday folks. Join us at the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas. Bring your Christmas with you. We need it. We appreciate it, especially these days. I'm not sure we're ready to prognosticate the Christmas yet to come, folks. But if we were to do that, we'd say that this Christmas, like Christmas of 1943, will come and go and be only as good as our humanity carries us. For all of us at the Merry Forums, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.